What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Doing business like a CEO while saving like a CFO.
Staples has all the supplies you need to run your business like a boss at prices that'll make your bookkeeper smile.
Now that is an achievement.
Everything from paper to pens.
And right now, a 12-pack of Bic Roundstick ballpoint pens is just 99 cents. And a 5-pack of Sharpie Accent highlighters is only $1.99.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store. Ends 1/26/19 in store only. Assorted colors. Limit 5.
It could have gone better.
Yeah, sure.
No, we're all good. Got a good second hour as well. Dave Bartu, Bill Riley will join us. So, talking a lot of college football in the next 60 minutes.
Yes, we are. And so, I'm excited to welcome in our next guest, Dave Bartu of the CFB Matrix. Sent out a little tweet last night regarding Pac-12 South Division recruiting. So, I'm excited to talk to him about that. Dave, joining us now. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing good, but, you know, if you guys are worried about your first hour, you're setting the bar with me awful low on the second hour, man.
Oh, no. With your voice joining us on the airwaves, we're rising in the ranks here.
But no, it's all good, and, yeah, I sent that out last night because you look at all the numbers right now, and, man, you know, it's got to be scary in terms of looking forward at the talent stratification in the Pac-12 South right now.
Yeah, it's definitely an ugly scene right now on the Pac-12 South Division recruiting trail. You know, you look at what's going on at USC. Brew McCoy just signed with USC in the early signing period, and now he's entering his name in the transfer portal, which has become a completely new, and it's going to completely change college football recruiting. But, you know, with what's going on at USC, it really kind of taints the image of Pac-12 South Division recruiting, I think.
Yeah, well, if you look across the board, everybody is below or well below their four-year moving average, which is not typical. I mean, usually what you have is what I call range-bound recruiting, okay? And it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Utah or UCLA or Arizona. You know, they have lows, they have highs. But over a 4 or 5 year period, it typically averages out, and you have this normal band of recruiting. And right now, what we're seeing is that you know, all of the teams in the Pac-12 South are below their moving averages right now. I can't even believe USC has a class even close to the top 10. They don't even have coordinators, you know, mm-hmm. And you know, the place looks like it's just not being run right now. But amazingly, it shows how strong their brand is. They're still a top 15 recruiter right now. But everybody else, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, UCLA especially, are all way off their four-year moving averages right now.
Yeah, so in talking about that UCLA, it seems like they're moving in a direction not positive. And it's kind of the trend across the Pac-12 South. Is that good for a team like Utah who consistently seems to maybe outperform their recruiting rankings?
Exactly. So if you're a Utah fan, to me, this is good for you long term, because Utah has never been a team that, even after it joined the Pac-12, yeah, recruiting has gone up. It's much better today than it was 10 years ago. In fact, last year, Utah walked into their best four-year moving average, since they've joined the Pac-12. But that overall talent base still isn't that high. It's still not even, you know, top 35 in the country. But what it allows for them is if everybody's pulling back in talent, to me, that means coaching becomes more and more important, you know. And so, if an Arizona, if Arizona State, if UCLA, if all these teams start pulling back, even if it's short term, then to me that's a huge benefit for Utah, because over the last 10 years, by my numbers, in my player development index, Utah has been the best at developing players versus their recruiting ranking over anyone else in the country. So, you know, if I'm a Ute fan and people's recruiting rankings across their classes are falling, even if Utah's is down as well, I think that still benefits them in the short term by having better coaching.
So let me ask you this, Dave, because I want to better understand what goes into it. But what factors into your four year average? Is it just the recruiting rankings, the class rankings? Is it rating average of players? What all goes into it?
No, what's involved there? And I try to keep everything as simple as possible. It's hard to tell a complex story.
Yes.
With a lot of numbers. So from a recruiting standpoint, it is the average class of your that are ranked out there. And I've never used ESPN because they only rank the top 25. They got two guys that are trying to look at NFL talent, so they don't even count at all. You know, so really, it's just two publishers. You got your Rivals and your 247. That's it. You know, before it was Scout and Rivals, and now it's just morphed into two others. And then what you also have to do is you got to account for attrition as well. So we'll go back in and pull out everybody that left, all the talent that's gone. You know, so if you have early NFL transfers or this transfer portal, you know, where guys are bouncing around, you really got to keep track of it because it's very easy for programs to become deficient in certain areas, linebacker, defensive line, offensive line, and so forth. So we have to constantly readjust for the attrition side of it. But those are really the only two factors, what comes in and then what you're retaining year after year.
And Dave, we're talking about the South, but moving to the North, I want to look at Oregon and Washington. It seems like they, even though, you know, the rest of the Pac-12 recruiting-wise is kind of down, it seems like they're kind of distancing themselves with Mario Cristobal and Chris Peterson up there. Are they just on a collision course to fight for the North for the next several years or for the foreseeable future?
It would seem that way, right? I mean, and certainly you would lean towards Washington having a much better coaching staff, but that can change. You know, Oregon right now is they're recruiting at a very high level, but you look at their offensive coordinator, and he grades out as one of the worst in the Pac-12. So, in spite of having a talent edge on most everybody in the conference, I think Oregon, what they're lacking is the coaching component. Hell, Cristobal is what, 35-42 on his career? I mean, it's not like he's ever done anything as a head coach that is beyond expectations. So I agree with you there, though. From a talent perspective, it certainly seems that way. And, but going forward, I think you're still going to have Washington State as a wild card just because of the coaching ability of Leach. And I think Stanford, I think the best years of Stanford under Shaw and under Harbaugh, the talent stratification there, I think the best years are gone, but they're still going to be incredibly competitive because of that coaching staff at Stanford.
So bringing it back to the South Division, one thing that has kind of been on my mind, Arizona State with Herm Edwards has really kind of seen a big uptick in their recruiting. They land a four-star quarterback, Jade Daniels. They land a good amount of players elsewhere at other positions. And then you look at UCLA with Chip Kelly. Everybody was expecting that to be a home run hire and everybody wanting to play for Chip, where Chip has kind of taken a little bit of a deliberate approach in recruiting where he does a little bit more scouting, looking for, I guess, under the radar prospects. And what I love about the fact that, you know, you work with numbers, you're not working with expectations. You're just looking at raw data. And so it's interesting to hear that, you know, overall, where it looks like Arizona State is recruiting really well, maybe they're really not. I don't know.
No, I don't see them improving at all right now. You know, off the top of my head, I don't know what their exact number is today because, you know, we're talking about a moving target. Mm-hmm. But with Arizona State, when I looked at it last night before I tweeted that out, you got a class ranking somewhere in the mid-30s. That's right in their recruiting range. that's right in what they normally do. Arizona State, until they recruit consistently in the top 25 with this coaching staff, they're not doing anything special, in my opinion. I think this is same old Arizona State, which right now actually isn't bad compared to the rest of the conference. But in terms of Herm and these guys pushing Arizona State overall into another level of recruiting, we're 2 years in, and I haven't seen it yet. And so unless something really dramatically changes at Arizona State, I would expect them to maintain that third best recruiter spot behind UCLA. That's a huge question mark. Yeah. And certainly USC. And as long as they can do that, I think they're going to be competitive. But I don't see Arizona State, unless they start recruiting in the top 25 consistently, to be anything other than, you know, a third, fourth place team in the Pac-12.
And looking at a team like Utah, they're kind of, it seems like, slow playing this recruiting class. Right now they have only 13 commits signed opposed to 20-plus for most of the other schools. It seems like they're kind of slow playing it, hoping to get some transfers and getting that later signing period to get some of their main guys. Is that just kind of something we're going to see with this kind of new landscape of college football?
You may. For Utah, maybe that's what they have to do this year. But I think it's becoming increasingly dangerous. Last year, the December signing period, about 77% of all the kids that signed Power 5 scholarships were done in December. This year, the number was almost 82%. So, you know, for programs that are waiting and waiting for the later signing period, I don't even call February National Signing Day. It's National Signing Day is in December and a late signing period now. For Utah and any other program that, you know, quote unquote, slow plays it or takes their time, unless they got kids that are basically stashed and are just waiting to sign in February, I think for Utah or any other program going forward, the more you get in the habit of waiting for February, I think it becomes a more dangerous game of trying to fill out your roster.
One thing that I'm super interested to see in how it evolves in our realm of coverage, where we at 24/7 Sports, this is what we cover specifically, is recruiting and do recruiting rankings and all of that kind of stuff, is how the actual transfer market is going to correlate to class rankings and that kind of stuff. They're not being factored in this season, but maybe they'll be taken into consideration in the future. Utah picks up a big transfer from Texas, Cameron Rising, who was a former four-star prospect coming out of high school. Is that something that you're going to be able to factor into your own ratings, Dave?
Yeah, well, we'll be able to factor that in. And there's a couple other things, though, that we're factoring in with that as well, is we're also tracking the success. You know, just because a guy transfers, you know, as a four-star out of Texas, does that mean he's still a four-star player? Or are there maybe some other emotional issues that go along with it? Why is he leaving Texas? I mean, for a lot of these guys, where you never know is, are they leaving because they don't like the staff? Are they leaving because the staff doesn't like them? We don't really know the backstory. So what I'm curious about going forward is tracking all of these different transfers and trying to see what their average impact is. And then take a look at that average impact by position. So, and what I mean by that is we may see transfers that, hey, if you get an offensive line transfer, that's great. You get a defensive back transfer, 92% of them explode and never even, you know, get the two deep. So I think it's something that we need to analyze in terms of its overall impact and not just assume that if a four-star goes from a Texas to a Utah, that talent level is still there and has the same opportunity as the rest of the four stars in terms of their performance.
And looking at a guy like Cam Rising, I don't know if you've been able to see him play much, but just replacing a four-star guy like that with, you know, with a guy who transferred out of the program in Jack Tuttle, does that help Utah's perception? Because I know, you know, when you have a transfer out of the program mid-season, that's kind of a negative look.
Yeah, it can be, and certainly I think it depends on how it's handled, you know, and what are the circumstances. I think that really, really varies. But in terms of, like, promoting transfers, if I'm the Utah staff, and heck, I've reached out to the football program before and said, you know, I'll give you all the numbers on this, but by my rankings, Utah is the best at their recruiting to NFL draftee ratio. Okay, so they are great at player development. So if I'm trying to sell transfers to the Utah program, first thing I do is I'd sit down and say, look at our NFL draftee to recruiting ratio. We develop players here. Okay, we take players of whether it's two stars or three stars or four stars. You know, we have the ability at this program to put guys into the NFL draft. And to me, that's got to be one of the best-selling tools they have in terms of getting those transfers into the program and getting the program recognized for the great development that it is.
So keeping the conversation on transfers, with this new transfer portal and the rules that have changed that have made it easier for players to transfer, who does this benefit the most and who does this hurt the most?
You know, that is going to be a tricky one, right? I mean, it's because long term, is it all just going to kind of average out? You know, are good teams going to be able to attract the better players, or are good players that are on, let's say, on a three deep on a really good team, maybe they're able to move up? I would like to think that what it will do is balance out the competition in college football, maybe a little bit better. But ultimately, I question whether the transfers are going to have that big of an impact overall. You know, I think we're going to get spots where you say, wow, look at this transfer had a huge impact. Look at West Virginia and their defensive and offensive line and Greer transfers. Boom, it translated into actually one good year out of eight for Holgerson, who parlayed it into a huge contract at Houston. You know, but overall, are all these transfers having a really big impact in college football, at least a positive one? But I'd like to think it's going to balance out the competition better, whereas better players on teams that are maybe stuck farther down in the two deep, you see more transfers into the G5 and maybe some lower-end Power 5 teams, and you get a better talent balance, which will put a greater emphasis on coaching in college football.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where it helps a lot of other programs, because you don't have the Alabama stockpiling five-star guys 2, 3, 4 deep. You don't have, mm-hmm. You don't have teams doing that. And then you also just have the free agency to let kids do what they want to do. What are your thoughts on, you know, how far this goes and how it should be regulated moving forward?
Oh, man, that's a really tough one. You know, I'm already kind of annoyed with where it's at right now, because you know, this transfer portal, when it came out, it was supposed to be 100% private for the players and the coaches and administration. We weren't supposed to know about these guys.
Yep.
You know, they were supposed to be given the anonymity of being able to test the transfer portal without having their names splattered all over the place. But somehow there are so many leaks in this that it already makes me question who's even managing this thing properly. So I think, like anything, we have to see how this plays out. And hopefully, and I know this is kind of an oxymoron, saying NCAA and proactive in the same sentence, but hopefully the NCAA could be proactive in working to refine it to make it a good program for the student athlete and the teams.
NCAA and proactive. That is an interesting
fighting
one.
Back the laughter.
Well, I was trying not to. You know, we can hope, right? It's like saying government and fiscal responsibility. Oh, dude, that's so funny.
Oh, man.
You know, so it's the same thing with NCAA and being proactive. But, you know, I understand why it was done. I just think going forward, I think there needs to be better ways of handling it. And I think it's better for the programs and players to keep it a little bit more behind the curtain and let them make the decision. Because I'd hate to see, for example, let's say a kid's three deep in Utah and puts his name on the transfer portal, but is 80% likely to just stay at Utah. But instead, boom, his name's all over the place. He wants to leave. He doesn't like Utah. There's backlash from the fans. And I just don't think that right now having everything out there in the public eye is really a good idea for college football right now.
I agree with you, Dave. It's going to be interesting to see. There's already been, you know, things that have been announced with transfers here in Utah that the players themselves haven't announced their intentions to transfer, but it's already been leaked. And, you know, that kind of, you know, for us, that kind of bugs us where, you know, it's still up to the kid. He still has the possibility of returning to the team. But now that his name's out there, how does that impact, you know, his relationship with the program, with the local, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I agree with you. I think that it would be nice to see some refinement in terms of how it's available to the public.
Yeah. You know, and how these kids are able to access it and so forth.
Yeah.
So that'll be one of the things I'm looking forward is, okay, they implemented this. The portal's there. We go through it for a year. Now, is NCAA going to sit down and refine it? Because there's no way that you can make this perfect on the first pass. And if they simply say, oh, it's great the way it is, then you can say, God, you guys are lazy. Really? Yep. You think you're so dang good that you can just create something and it's good the first time. So I think what we're hopefully going to see is a little bit more privacy in these things. And somehow I wish these administrations would just not have these leaks and let these kids just deal with this stuff on their own and announce what they want to do when they want to do it.
Couldn't agree more with you, Dave. So we'll wrap it up here with just bringing it back to the original topic in terms of the Pac-12 South Division and recruiting. I guess, what are your expectations moving towards signing day? Are a lot of these programs, are they close to finishing where they've been the last 4 years? Or is it pretty bad?
Well, I think you go down the list. Okay, USC is probably going to finish outside of the top 10 in recruiting for only the fourth time this century. That's not very good. Okay, and they're still a mess offensive and defensive coordinator wise. Arizona State, I think they've gotten most of the kids already signed that they're going to sign. So you're looking at a class in the 30s, pretty normal right there. We talked about Utah. Look, they only have 12 or 13 commits right now.
Yeah, 13.
So, I mean, you get 6 or 7 really quality kids in the next month, and boom, they'll be in the 40s like they have been for, the last 6 years. I think the one you really, really have to circle is UCLA. They have, 20 commits right now? 20. And their class is in the 50s. This is a program that is top 15 recruiter this century, and they're in the 50s. And if you hear Chip Kelly ever say, hey, we don't need those stars, we need good players, grab your hip boots, because he's full of crap, okay? At Oregon, he had the benefit of being the most talented team most of the time, and when he faced a team that out-recruited Oregon, he was barely 500. So if he goes with the attitude that UCLA doesn't need to recruit, we'll coach him up, I think this is going to be a short term for him in Westwood. That's the one big team I think that we got to circle right now as way behind the eight ball on recruiting, and trend's got to start somewhere. And if this trend keeps up, I don't think he's going to be very long for Westwood.
Dave, that was great stuff. Thanks so much for hopping on with us and having a little discussion about recruiting. I'm always down for a recruiting discussion. That's what I do. So we appreciate you hopping on with us, Dave. Make sure to catch him at CFB Matrix. Always a lot of good content there. Dave, thanks so much for hopping on with us.
All